It was summer 2009. Fred Ruttman was home alone grading papers when his heart stopped. That was the first time he died. Suffering from sudden onset full heart block syndrome, Fred's heart's electrical system had started dying. He would go on to die, clinically, another 19 times, earning him the moniker, repeatedly dead Fred. Odds of this happening are equivalent to winning a major lottery every week for 5 years. Hear how Fred lives with the syndrome, dying and coming back, and how that affects his views on life. This is Fred's story. Welcome to Profound Awesomeness, a show about humanity's ability to overcome huge challenges, calamities, and close brushes with death, and turn them into opportunities for growth. I'm Adrian Jones. I'm a heart attack survivor, and it's my mission to share these stories to highlight our capabilities to not only survive, but to discover the profound awesomeness that's within each of us, regardless of our situation. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Profound Awesomeness. I'm your host, Adrian Jones, and I'm joined today by Fred Ruttman. How are you, Fred?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Adrian. How are you?
Never better, as they say. Never better. Thank you so much for asking. Where are you today?
I am in Toronto, and you are in California,
I believe? Northern California, a little north of San Francisco. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So joining.
Is that crab country?
Well, it is in a way.
I'm looking at your hat, but I can't tell. It's something crab country, but I can't see this.
I'm wearing a hat for Sea View Crab Company. I'm not sponsored by them or anything like that. It's just, they're actually based out of the North Carolina area, but, we have Dungeness crabs here in Northern California that we eat, when it's season. Yeah.
Okay. Well, crab country companies, step it up. Let's get some sponsorships
going. Yeah, right. Thank you for that. Well, let's jump into things, Fred. I think your story is quite remarkable. They say you might have more than 9 lives. We're going to find out here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So let's dive in. Tell us about your story.
Well, it all starts in 2009 in the summer. I was marking some economics papers, which is generally not the most enjoyable exercise you can start with. And something happened to me. I wasn't sure what happened. And I woke up, or I thought I woke up, and I was sweating and breathing heavily. And I really didn't understand what was happening. It happened a few more times. Eventually, it turned out that we figured out that my heart was stopping. And that's how the summer I died 20 times got rolling. And it took them an awfully long time to figure out what was going on. Didn't figure it out until August. Unfortunately, most of these times when I passed out or my heart stopped, I also collapsed and hit my head and suffered a lot of brain trauma, concussions, resulting in PTSD and all sorts of cognitive deficits that have taken a long, long time to heal. And I'm pretty fortunate that they've healed it all. Actually, I'm pretty fortunate to be alive and even more fortunate to be any degree of functional. That's where it started.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And as a heart attack survivor myself, this is hits home in a way for sure. Tell me what caused your heart to stop. Like, what triggered the failure?
Well, the condition is called a sudden onset full heart block. So your heart has these electrical nodes or distribution systems that send the electrical pulses to your heart to tell it when to contract, so it beats. Mine just started dying. That whole electrical system started dying. And if you don't have any electrical, your heart doesn't beat. Your blood pressure goes to zero. You have no oxygen in the brain and you're dead. So, you know, I use the number 20 based on what I've learned from the doctor. So it's clinically dead. So there's a number of definitions of clinically dead. The one I'm using is your heart has stopped for 30 seconds or longer, and you stop breathing for 30 seconds or longer, both at the same time. And that's what was happening to me.
So in the summer of 2009, if we go back and talk about that for a minute, you're at home marking economics papers. Your heart stopped. So What was that sensation like? You had this sudden onset full heart block, which I'm assuming you didn't know that was happening, but tell us about the experience. Mm-hmm.
The dying part initially was pretty bland, actually. The coming back to life part was the more sensational or actually pretty painful part. While I was sitting or lying down, you know, you're just all of a sudden you're gone. When I had these events, when I was standing, I eventually dubbed these events called brain quakes. So I don't know if you're old enough to remember the old Bugs Bunny Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote swallows the earthquake pills.
Okay.
That's what it felt like in my head. It felt like an earthquake was going off in my head. I can't tell you how long it lasted, but then all of a sudden you just fade to black and collapse. I had to be in an upright position for that sensation to occur. So that was pretty insane. And you don't have time to do anything. You know, you can't say like, oh, I better kneel down or something. It takes over your body and boom.
Wow. And were you home alone when this happened the first time?
Yeah, I was home alone a number of times for this, but other times I was out in public, you know, I could have been walking. Thank God this didn't happen like at the edge of a subway platform or something like that, where I just could have keeled over right in front of a train, or if I had been driving or anything like that.
So what happens when you go down? So this condition occurs and you have a fade to black moment and you collapse. How do you come back? Do you have to go to the hospital? Like, what happens?
Well, your body is very, very well constructed, except when it doesn't work properly. You have all sorts of backup systems. So even though these primary nodes had all died, there's supposed to be, you know, secondary and tertiary modes that kick in to help keep you alive. Those had started to decay as well. So they didn't kick in quite as quickly as they should have. So every time I came back to life, it was because my body decided it was going to come back to life. These secondary, tertiary systems eventually kicked in. But it is a very, very painful and agonizing process when you've been oxygen deprived and electrically deprived. The sensations that I remember, probably, no disrespect to veterans who've been in this situation, probably like being in the middle of a battlefield with just bombs going off, and I could feel explosions and all sorts of things, physically feel them as I was coming back to life. It's something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Not that I have any enemies, but, you know, if I did, it was that awful. It's far and away the most awful thing I've ever been through.
What happens? You wake up on the ground. I mean, you come around and you're laying there and you go through this terrible reentry process, I guess you'd call it. I mean, it sounds horrible. I want to spend a little more time on this, but just so our listeners get a feel for what you went through. So you come around, you come back. You're on the ground or slumped over in a chair or over a table or something like that. Are you fine? Are you like, it just take a few deep breaths?
Oh, you're not fine.
Yeah. Like you're not just taking a few deep breaths and drinking a glass of water and you go back to life. Like, what do you do then?
You're pretty disoriented.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a while to get back to your feet and figure out where you are and what's going on. Of course, the first 20 odd times this happened, I didn't exactly know what was happening. So, I mean, I didn't know I was dead. I didn't know I'd come back to life. I didn't know how bad my head trauma was. So in some ways that was a blessing because I didn't know how precarious my situation was. In other ways, you know, you can't really articulate what's going on to people who may be trying to help you or who are in the ambulance with you or in the emergency room or any of these things. So it's one of those, you know, blessing and a curse scenarios. So the blessing, I came back to life, you know, but I was really, really damaged and I didn't understand how damaged I was.
Are there lasting effects for being clinically dead, not breathing for 30 seconds or having a heartbeat for 30 seconds?
Oh yeah. There's a lot of brain trauma for sure. I've got perpetual PTSD anxiety running in the background all the time because even though they fixed me with a pacemaker, which is, you know, ultimately that replaces the electrical signals in your heart, I've been blessed with a series of pacemakers that failed. So I've gone through this again in 2013 and 2018. So it wasn't just those original 20 that hit me. When I'm 100% dependent on the pacemaker. So when it fails, I go through this all over again. And it's failed a few dozen times. Thankfully, not every time that it failed, I didn't hit my head each time. Some were minor collapses and some weren't as lengthy as the 30 seconds, but some were. So by the time 2013 came around, I had progressed to where I thought I could go back to work. And then it just started all over again. And then I went through the recovery phase again. In 2018, I thought, okay, I can go back to work. And then bam. So it's been a pretty amazing process to go through. But I've also had a lot of blessings happen along the way with tons of people helping me and finding a couple of things out that really accelerated my recovery.
And I can't wait to hear about those, but I'd like to hone in just for a minute or two longer here on the experience of dying. You know, a lot of us wonder what that is like. What will it be when we die? Do you see a white light? Is it warm? Is it like, what is your experience?
Unfortunately, and I feel kind of ripped off, I didn't have any of the come to the light experiences that other people claim they've had. And I'm not disputing that they've had these claims. What I believe happens is that we each have a fairly unique experience. Some of us are meant to have that white light and some of us aren't. I didn't. I had a number of out-of-body experiences, which were beyond disorienting. They were very uncomfortable. I guess depending on what area of faith you come from, whether you believe there's heaven and hell or, you know, we have a soul and you become an angel or any of those factors. I believe when I was having those out-of-body experiences, it was my soul in this big battle deciding whether it was going to go wherever it was supposed to go to or fighting to go back into my body. It's sort of like there's this spiritual glue that holds your soul in your body. And when you get close to death, that glue starts to deteriorate, you know, as most glues do. Sometimes it snaps you back and sometimes it doesn't. That's what I went through. Also very unpleasant experience because your soul is very confused. It's looking for direction and it's not getting direction.
Yeah. What's that like?
It's not as unpleasant as the direct coming back to life part, but it is, you know, very, very unpleasant in that think of the most uncomfortable, confusing situation you've ever found yourself in, social anxiety, whatever, and multiply it by 1,000 or 10,000 times. And that's what you're stuck with. And you have no control over it. It's just as incredible and awkward position to be in as you can imagine. Maybe you can't even imagine it. So I've certainly never been in anything similar to that while I've been conscious.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine it. I'm fascinated by this. And you've had out-of-body experiences when you were dead, let's call it. I've read a lot about those. What is it like from your experience?
I was looking down on my body. So, you know, there were times I was out in the middle of a field, like I was out cycling, and I was the only person in the field. Like I was on a bike path, there nobody around. And I was just looking down at my body tangled up in my bike, going through this incredibly confusing, disorienting, uncomfortable scenario. I don't know exactly how long it lasts, but it's certainly an exhausting. I mean, this whole thing is exhausting every time it happens. You come out of it disoriented and exhausted and bewildered. And, you know, what just happened to me? At least after 2013, and I fully understood that when these events happened, it was because my heart was stopping, my pacemaker was stopping, and I had a clue that I was dead, but it really isn't any great comfort to say, oh, yeah, I was just dead again. So I know what's going on now.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So of these 20 times, how many times were you alone and had to come through reentry and come back to life by yourself?
I like that term, reentry. I think that's I've got to add that. The large majority of the times, even when I was in the hospital a few times, they don't get to you as quickly as they show on TV and in the movies. So I had a number of them in the hospital. The large majority, I was on my own. And there were a couple times in the hospital, they had been monitoring me and saw that my heart had stopped, and they came into the room with a SWAT team, and they were going to hit me with the paddles. And then I guess I re-entered, you know, seconds before they were actually going to hit me with the paddles.
Gosh. And you've hit your head a number of times, as you said earlier. Have you had sustained any long-lasting damage because of that?
Oh, for sure. There's so many factors. One was the concussions, because I would hit my head on whatever was the hardest object in the vicinity, whether it was a curb or a concrete sink or a manhole cover, whatever was, you know, in the area. But there's also the oxygen deprivation. And then, you know, you can layer on the PTSD, and because you're sitting around, you've got this computer that's supposed to be keeping you alive, but yet you know that it's failed dozens of times and it can fail again at any moment. So that's always running in the background. Even if you try not to let it affect you, it's always there. Am I going to fall off the subway platform? Should I be driving? Could I be driving? I'm told I can drive, but is it really the smartest thing to do? I don't know. So, which is why I walk and ride my bike most of the time, just because I don't think I want to put anybody else in that realm of danger.
No, I think that's wise, although an impact to your livelihood and how you live your life, no doubt. Have you fallen off your bike because of this?
A few times, yeah. Sometimes my fault, sometimes balance. I've also got some long-haul COVID symptoms that affect, you know, your balance and reflexes and stuff like that. But, you know, you bike in Canada and you bike in the winter, so sometimes it's slippery. You know, you're on ice and whatever, and your bike just goes woof. Well, maybe not woof, but it just slides out from under you.
Yep, got it. Yeah, that's got to be terrifying, you know, to be riding. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just amazing that I haven't broken any bones or, you know, I should have had a few broken hips out of all this. I'm at that age where falls can be very dangerous. I do have a secret weapon that's kept me a little healthier and helped me recover. So I'll just attribute my excessive bone density to that.
Ah, your secret weapon of bone density. Excellent. Nice superpower to have. Okay. So you fought off the bike a few times. You had issues with your head and your brain. What about your heart? Have you had any lasting damage to your heart? Because I know the heart is a muscle that without oxygen, it dies and it doesn't regenerate once the muscle is dead. Mm-hmm. What about your heart? How's it holding up?
As far as I know, except for this little, you know, not having an electrical system, it's pretty good. I've had some extensive testing. They've looked for hardening of the arteries. They've looked for thickening of the ventricle walls, and they haven't found anything that they can trace back to this. It is kind of full with electrical equipment, so we haven't had a formal conversation about it, but I suspect at some point there's not going to be anything they can do via pacemakers and wiring anymore. And if I need some extra help, it might be, you know, transplant time. That's just speculation. I know they can't put any more electrical wires into my heart. There's just no more room.
Hmm. And is sudden onset full heart block, how common is it? Mm-hmm. And do you know if it's congenital?
There are a few people that have a congenital heart block issue. The sudden onset part is the one that was unique to me. Heart block is fairly common in males in their 70s. So me having this in my 40s was out of the realm of normal, and which is part of the reason they had a hard time figuring out what it was, that plus the fact that they kept trying to prove I was having a heart attack. So that theory didn't hold so well as a congenital condition. But to be honest, they really don't know why this happened to me.
Yeah. And are you one in a billion, one in a million?
I don't know exactly how rare that is, but I know the circumstances that happened to me with the, you know, the misdiagnoses and the pacemaker fails and all that stuff. I've had a statistician suggest the totality of what happened to me would be the equivalent of somebody winning a major lottery every week for 5 years. Hmm. So it's pretty rarefied air.
Yeah, you're definitely rarefied air. So you mentioned earlier that you had received many blessings as a result of this sudden onset full heart block. Tell us about those.
Well, I think when you have a trauma, you have a decision to make, is what attitude are you going to have coming out of the trauma? And you can say, miserable, my life's over. Why did this happen to me? You know, all that train of thought. Or you can say, okay, this has been pretty crappy. You know, I've lost my income. I'm financially unstable. Things aren't so great. What options do I have to put myself back on track? I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do, but I've chosen option B. You know, how do I make myself better? How do I reclaim my life? How do I give back to people who might be going through something similar, even though I know nobody's going to go exactly through what I've gone through? It's just not possible. But people are going through their own crap. You've gone through your crap. And how do I be a force of positivity to other people who may need it? I haven't done it alone. I've had great community support. My family's been amazing. One of the reasons I've written my book is to say, you know, thank you to all these amazing people that have helped me, but to also let other people who are going through hard stuff know. There are people who are out there that do want to help you if you ask for it and you let them help you. And you do have a choice as to how you live your life going through the rest of your adversity. You can just say, well, this sucks and, you know, I'm just going to be miserable. Or you have a choice. You know, your attitude is everything. The Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, basically to sum up his philosophy is, if you have hope, you can conquer almost anything. You know, this is a guy that came through the concentration camps. And it's true. Like, hope doesn't cost you anything. It's a limitless supply that's out there if you want to grab it. I'm not saying it's always easy to grab it, but, you know, it is out there.
What do you grab onto?
A number of things. I grab onto a little science, a little faith, friends and family. I'm fortunate that when I was going through all this, I became parts of a couple of communities of just outstanding, outstanding people that they just go through their life trying to be good people and help people. And, you know, they absorb me into their community and their families. And I know whenever I'm going through something, I can just call any of them, whether it's getting me to a doctor's appointment, whether it was cooking me meals after, you know, my dozen or so surgeries, they were always there. So I know I've got that anchor. I'm, you know, I believe in God strongly. I don't always understand God's messages to me. I think most of us don't. There's an old Yiddish expression, man plans and God laughs. I think that pretty much sums up my life. So am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing after everything that's happened to me? Because that's a question I get. Why do you think you're still alive? Somebody's got to have plans for you. I'm going with what my gut tells me, whether it's the right thing or not. I don't know. It feels right. I guess I'll find out when I stop being repeatedly dead Fred.
I should point out to our listeners that I can see our names on here. And for Fred, it's Fred Ruttman, AKA repeatedly dead Fred, here on my screen. So he's got, you've got your handle, repeatedly dead Fred.
Yeah, that's thank you to my friend Deanna, who called me up one day and said, hey, repeatedly dead Fred, how's it going?
It's clever, although you may not want that moniker. It is apt, that's for sure. It has a nice ring to it, as they say.
I actually call her trophy wife because her husband's in the trophy business.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds like you guys are trading some good names back and forth. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, and do you, just out of curiosity, I'm sitting here as you're talking, wondering, do you live by yourself? And I'm just wondering, yes. You do. Does that impact how you live your life in terms of how you stay in touch with people so they know you're okay? And, you know, in case one of these episodes were to occur, someone's checking in on you, and like, how does that work?
I'm never away from my phone. You know, I've got all my emergency info into the phone. I think most of the new phones have a category where first responders can just open up the phone to that emergency section and find out all your medical details and who to call and everything like that. So, and that's part of the anxiety. I just will not allow myself to be anywhere without that resource.
I'll bet. Do you have a... one of the Apple Watches, or I know they have a feature that if you fall over, it'll trigger an emergency phone call or an alert. Does you have one of those set up?
No, but I'm pretty sure my phone does. It has like a collision alert kind of thing. So it will activate, I believe, even if I'm on my bike and I fall over, it will activate.
Got it. Okay, good. All right, so we're talking about blessings now. There's a lot of attitudinal approaches that you're taking to help frame how you're living now and making sense of things and making sure that you're living in a hopeful, inspired way. Let's transition that, because I think it's a nice natural segue into profound awesomeness. Mm-hmm. And how mm-hmm. profound awesomeness is manifesting itself for you in your life. How does it manifest itself?
That's a great question. And I think it depends on the day. Sometimes it's just making it through the day. Mm. Sometimes it's being there for somebody who just calls you that they're having a lousy day, and not so much offering them up a solution, but just listening to the person. That's a skill I've really gained over the last 10 years or so, is you don't have to have the answer to every person's issue. You just have to be there for them in whatever way they ask you to. So if it's just listening to a friend, I was listening to a friend the other day who is having some family issues trying to settle their mother's estate. These should be things that you should be able to do civilly, but sometimes they just go off the rails and that person just needed somebody to talk to for half an hour. So I made myself available to talk for half an hour. Other times I'm fortunate enough to be able to give a talk. You know, you had mentioned you've done a couple of talks for the Heart Association. I took that idea and I ran with it. And I contacted the Canadian Heart and Stroke Association after we had talked the other week to see if I could set up something where I could benefit them, you know, help them raise some money, use my story. So it's, you know, all those things and everything in between that you just try and make your small contributions to the world. You know, there's the death by a thousand paper cuts, and then there's life by a thousand small acts of kindness.
Mm. Wow, I like the sound of that. Do you find that you have any more meaning and purpose in your life as a result of consistently having these close encounters with death?
It's actually not something I've really thought about, but I guess I must. You know, it's really something hard to quantify. I've always had I'm Jewish, so I've always believed in God, even though I wasn't a practicing Jew in my younger years. So now, you know, I go to synagogue twice a day, do the prayers, everything. And I think, you know, prayer are a form of meditation, or meditation's a form of prayer. And I think that strengthens me and, you know, fills up my batteries so that I can do things for other people as well as for myself. You have to fill your own batteries before you can fill somebody else's.
This is true. How about, as we think about profound awesomeness, and you made an interesting comment moments ago. What was the Yiddish expression? Man makes a plan and God laughs.
Man plans. Man plans, God laughs.
Yeah, okay. How do we, I mean, so breaking that down a little bit, how do we, if you know, playing off of that a bit here, how do we live? Mm-hmm. I mean, how are we supposed to live if we make plans and God laughs, right? Like, oh, you think you're going to do that way, don't you? You know, how should we approach things?
Well, you know, there's the concept of free will, you know, that we have free will. And there's the framework that, yes, we have free will within a limit. So if you're solidly in the God camp, and that God knows everything past, present, and future, God knows where you're going to end up. So your free will is more you making your choices that you think are best for yourself, hopefully. And you're going to end up, despite all those free choices, where God wants you. Because the tools are going to be made available to you or not available to you to sort of push you in a couple of directions. And I'm going to struggle on the source here, but if you're not having obstacles put in your way, that means that God has kind of given up on you. Those obstacles are God giving you a little smack on the back of the head and say, hey, buddy, you know, time to change direction here. So you've got the free will to, you know, either change that direction or take a different direction. Somehow it's all going to play out. Everything's going to work out for the good is the basic attitude. So if I want to travel from Toronto to Northern California, 1,000 different routes. I can pick any route, make any adjustment, but eventually I'm going to get to Adrian's house in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I like that. Obstacles is proof that God hasn't given up on you. I like the sound of that. Mm-hmm. Mm. Really interesting. So you've got a book. Tell us about your book.
I have my book that came out in March. I don't know if this will show up.
The Summer I Died 20 Times. Forward by somebody. Gia Stevens, maybe?
Jin Stevens.
Got it. Okay.
And Jin is the author of the book Fast, Feast, Repeat. It's a New York Times bestseller. And that is my secret weapon to which I attribute the large majority of my healing and recovery to. And it is all about intermittent fasting, which is something we did for thousands and thousands of years before we became an industrialized society and started eating all these ultra-processed foods. We never knew where our next meals were coming from. You know, in the 1800s, kids weren't going to the soccer field and then, you know, stopping every 10 minutes for orange slices and Kool-Aids. We ate often every second or third day when we could find food. And that's the way our bodies are set up to survive. So intermittent fasting is not a diet, as it's often touted in the media. It's a style of eating. And as Jin Stevens claims, it's a health plan with a side benefit of weight loss. And there's so much science behind this. You can read either Dr. Fung's book, The Obesity Code, if you want the heavy, heavy science. Or you can read Jin's book, Fast, Feast, Repeat, which actually gives you great direction on how to use intermittent fasting as a tool to best serve you and what you need to accomplish. I ended up as a moderator in Jin's Facebook group. There was about 350,000 people in that group. I've seen firsthand all the benefits of intermittent fasting, and I've seen it in literally thousands of other people. It's not woo-woo science. It's science.
Yeah, I believe it. I myself have not dabbled with intermittent fasting, but I do have some friends who are starting to, and it, intuitively it makes sense to me. And it's, I guess, has had nice benefits for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I reversed my type 2 diabetes. I reversed sleep apnea. I reversed my asthma. I've lost a ton of weight. You know, I've gone from a size 60 pant to a 38. I've lost all the inflammation in my body. I don't have an ache or pain. And after what I've been through, you know, I played hockey. I played rugby. I played football. I was, you know, morbidly obese for many, many years. My body shouldn't be happy right now. And it is. It's very happy. I probably feel as good as I've ever felt in my life.
Congratulations. That's great news. Oh, that's really great, great news. And when was your last full heart block?
Oh, my last pacemaker surgery was in November. So okay. 5-6 months ago.
Okay, got it. Well, that's wonderful. You've been able to address some health issues and you feel better and you've lost weight and all these things because of this intermittent fasting approach that you're taking. Oh, that's great to hear. So this book is available, I'm guessing, wherever one can buy a book, right?
I hope so. For sure it's on Amazon.
Okay.
I know they're working on Barnes & Noble and they're trying to get it in the Indigo stores here in Canada. So those are the big chains.
Got it. Okay, Great. And for people who want to know more, they can read your book. But do you have a website or a social media presence anywhere that you'd like to share?
They can find me on LinkedIn. So Fred Ruttman on LinkedIn. I have a small Instagram that I've started, Repeatedly Dead Fred. So they can find a lot of the podcasts I've done. Or if you just Google Repeatedly Dead Fred, I think I'm like the first 30 things that'll show up. Not that there's a lot of other Repeatedly Dead Freds out there.
Probably not. Probably not. Okay, so you've got an Instagram, Repeatedly Dead Fred, and you're on LinkedIn. People can track down more of your story there and follow you along those lines. Great. Well, I wanted to thank you, Fred, for coming on the show and sharing your story. And this is definitely the first time we've had a conversation around sudden onset full heart block. It's something I think I want to do a little research on myself and make sure that this isn't something that I might be dealing with in the future. Hopefully not, but...
Well, you'd be a good 30 years away from it.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Knock on wood. I've had enough heart issues, heart scares to last me a lifetime, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story and your experiences with intermittent fasting and about your book and the blessings that we have each and every day in our lives. So powerful to hear and reinforce. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Just a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you for joining the Profound Awesomeness family. And we're definitely following you, wishing you all the best out there.
Thank you. You too. And thank you for doing this podcast, because it allows so many people to find resources and, to charge their own batteries. Mm-hmm. It's just invaluable. So give yourself a pat on the back, for the good work that you're doing as well.
Thank you. There you go. I'll try not to break my arm doing that in the process, but thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. And I hope that, it is my goal to provide hope, inspiration, and motivation and give people resources and all that. And if each conversation that I have on the podcast, if we can help just one person, we've made a difference. Mm-hmm. And just think of that ripple effect that can take place, can be extraordinarily powerful in my mind. So thank you.
I agree.
Thank you so much for that feedback. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We'd love your feedback. Please be sure to rate and review and subscribe to Profound Awesomeness wherever you download your podcasts. If you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at profoundawesomeness@gmail.com.